yourself, little man. Don't let them tell you that they have the plan, 'cause everyone's lost chin deep in the sand. And what they're trying to sell to you, you shouldn't be buying. Think for yourself, little. Well, a very hearty welcome to you folks out there to a show called Thinking Clearly. I'm Bob Frelick here with
Julia Minton.
And we want to give you a little preliminary information about how you can contact us and keep in touch with us.
You can find us on Facebook, Thinking Clearly Radio Show. And by we, I mean mostly Bob, posts our promos and often wrap up show notes and whatnot. Another great way you can correspond with us. And most importantly, you can subscribe to our podcast, thinkingclearly.libsyn.org. That's LIBSYN. And you can find our entire back stock of shows if you just can't get enough of Julie and Bob, Thinking Clearly.
That's right. It's libsyn.com, but I'll...
What did I say? Libsyn.com.
Did you say libsyn.com? Okay.
Thinking Clearly.
Thinking Clearly.
Dot.
Libsyn.
dot com.
You got it. And so we do welcome your input, especially telling us what kind of topics that you'd like to hear, because this is not just all critical thinking, how to use logic and that sort of thing. We have a variety of related topics to critical thinking, and tonight is no exception to that.
Mm-hmm. And a number of our show's topics have been prompted by listener feedback. We really do appreciate the suggestions folks give us, the questions, the comments. We love our critical thinking community.
You're a wealth of information out there. And I do want to read the short version of our description, our working definition of critical thinking. Critical thinking is a mode of thinking that uses the processes of logical reasoning based on a thorough examination and evaluation of a robust cross-section of evidence relevant to the issue at hand when forming claims, conclusions, opinions, and beliefs. So we're looking for evidence-based logic to lead to a conclusion. Basically, that's our short description. And I do want to give folks the quote of the month because it relates very strongly to the topic tonight. The quote is, "To get real diversity of thought, you need to find the people who genuinely hold different views and invite them into the conversation." And that's a quote from Adam Grant, who's an American author and professor at the University of Pennsylvania. And that relates to the topic in that this is the third episode in a three-episode series on Thinking Clearly about engaging in civil dialogues and the importance of civil dialogues and what they are and how to do them. And tonight, Julia and I are going to attempt to demonstrate a civil dialogue. And this is completely unrehearsed, although we did discuss various topics to select one that we genuinely disagree about.
That was a bit tricky. That I put forward a few suggestions, you put forward a few suggestions, and we kind of looked at each other and said, I can't disagree with that.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't have a strong opinion about that.
And so it took a little bit of searching to actually come up with this,
but
we did find a topic.
We did find a topic to help us with our civil dialogue. This thing that Bob and I found that we disagree about, we decided it would be a good idea to have an in-studio facilitator to observe our interaction and offer commentary on our process to add to the discussion of civil dialogue. So I'd like to welcome classical Margaret Lewis,
classical Margaret.
KMUD programmer, engineer.
Hi, Julia. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Margaret. Thanks for joining us.
Sure. Thank you for asking. It was I'm somewhat honored to be part of this.
Yeah, we're so happy to have you here. We couldn't think of a better facilitator.
Especially braving the weather that you had to trudge through to get here.
Oh, yeah, that was tough.
It's getting home that might be the trick, but
that's right.
But we're here. We're really glad to have Margaret with us. Like I said, she's going to be observing our process and helping us really with the process. The point is not necessarily exactly the content, but how we're talking about it.
Mm-hmm. And tell us about the topic, Margaret.
Well, the topic is. Humanity is worth saving. I'm letting them digest that for a moment.
Okay. It's just a little, it's just a tiny little topic that Bob and I could find a disagreement on.
Okay, well, and Bob supports the proposition and Julia opposes it. And we have a format for the discussion. And the first thing we're going to do is toss a coin to see who will go first. So here I go. I have a coin right here. Are we?
You want to be heads or tails?
Am I preempting? Oh, okay. You have to decide first.
Tails.
It's heads.
I think it was a double-headed coin. Did you? Wait a minute.
It was my coin.
Bob provided the coin.
Check it out, Margaret. Just so you know,
This actually, there is a heads and there is a tails.
All right.
I'm sorry.
We want to keep this honest here.
But, all right. I mean, he had the coin. You went first, so, you know. I mean, you decided first, so it was fair, I think.
Okay. Go ahead, Bob.
Well, say a little more about the format that we're going to have so folks know.
Okay.
Before we get into how wrong Bob is.
What you mean, we white men? No, I'm not involved in this discussion.
Yes, she's the neutral facilitator.
Okay, this is the way it's going to work. There will be two rounds of 15 minutes each, and Julia and Bob will discuss the topic with a five-minute, quote, debriefing processing session where I will give some feedback about what I've observed and another 5 minutes and after the second round, and then we will discuss further what happened during the demonstration. And I want to say also, it's going to be, I think, in approaching this whole idea, it's going to be difficult to keep the process of the discussion and the topic of the discussion on two different tracks in our minds. So just listeners, just stay with me on that, because we're not going to discuss what they're discussing. We're going to discuss how they're discussing it. Right?
No, exactly. I was going to chime in with absolutely an important reminder along that line, which is... although we're here to discuss a specific topic, which is whether or not humanity is worth saving, the focus is the process because, you know, this is our third part in our series of civil dialogue. And so we're really looking to engage in an example of civil dialogue. We will be opening the phone lines towards the end of the show, about 7:50. So really towards the end of the show. And you may, if... I know I will feel compelled. I know you will feel compelled to comment on or ask questions about the topic Bob and I are discussing. But again, noting the difference, paying attention to what Margaret was just saying, the process versus the content of the dialogue, and making a distinction. So I know we're going to be saying some things that might have you up and yelling at your radio.
Or dialing your phone.
Dialing your phone. But to keep in mind that we are kind of on two tracks here, discussing the content, the debate, and the process of how we engage.
Yeah. I just want to add one more thing for the listeners. I'm going to be timing this with a little timer, and it's going to make little beeping noises, so don't let that distract you from the flow of the conversation. But just keep in mind that that's what's going on. Thank you.
And the content is actually what is being said, and the process is how people say it. And the process always affects the dynamics. How you say something affects the dynamics. So if I said, for example, what's your evidence for that conclusion? That's a whole different thing than if I said it, what's your evidence for that conclusion? So how we say things, you can't see, listeners, our body language, but that's very important, eye contact, how much we're looking at each other, how much we're listening, we're appearing to be listening. So there's a lot going on when people are having a discussion. And the reason we're doing this demonstration is so that when you go out and you do your examples, you try to do civil dialogue with someone in your life, you'll have some ideas on how to do that. Okay, Margaret, why don't you just review some of the guidelines for civil dialogue?
Okay. I'm just going to go down the list here. Be passionate, but not hostile. Truly listen and attempt to understand and acknowledge the other person's argument in its strongest form. Avoid grandstanding or pontificating. Attempt to isolate areas of common ground or agreement while also exploring and clarifying areas of difference. and allow a genuine mutual search for the truth of the matter at hand, with attempts to stimulate each other to stretch and deepen his or her thinking, without the goal of seeking to persuade the other person to adopt your position. So I get that it's a mutual respect. It's like two columns rather than entwined vines, right? Yeah. Okay.
And we talked a lot about critical thinking processes, but this is an attempt to integrate critical thinking along with civil dialogue. Okay, so I win the coin toss, then I get to go first. And as I thought about this topic, first of all, I read the topic and I looked at all the words, the key words. And the key word for me in this topic is humanity worth saving? So for me, the key word that came out of that is worth. Is it worth saving? So the first thing I realized is that this is not your typical kind of go look for facts and evidence and a robust search for evidence and then taking that evidence and linking it logically to make an inferential conclusion. When you see the word worth, it's like when you see the word should or ought. It means that it's more related to ethics, morality, aesthetics, maybe. Mm-hmm. It's a values-based question. So I'm thinking to myself, well, how will I really figure out what my position? I know my position is very strong. I do believe, I would say, hell yes, humanity is worth saving. And I'm having no ambiguity about that at all. But what I did is I attempted to introspect and to really figure out why I believe that. What is it that I can believe? Why do I believe it? Not that I can go on the internet or I can do a lot of research and find a lot of facts to back that up, because it's values-based. But it is my strong opinion. So I started thinking and examining my motivation. And although I'm going to give you three sources that I think are my sources of my motivation, I do want to say that I think I could go and look for evidence to make this statement. And I'm going to read this so I don't leave anything out. Of those things we know of and all agree exist, humanity is the greatest potential, has the greatest potential at ever deepening levels to understand the universe in which it lives, and to use that knowledge to survive and thrive for billions and billions of years, becoming the consciousness of the universe and a force for good.
Now, that's pretty far out, man.
I know. It's kind of Star Trek-y. It sounds kind of esoteric, but you know me well enough to know that it's not some kind of mystical kind of thing that I'm talking about. And I'll talk a little more about that.
I'm getting to know you a lot better right now. What was the first part of that again?
The first part is just of all those things that we know of and all agree exist, okay, that humanity has the greatest potential at ever-deepening levels to understand the universe in which it lives and to use that knowledge to survive and thrive for billions and billions of years, becoming the consciousness of the universe and a force for good. Okay, now, first of all, and you, Julia, I know this about me, but I have a naturalistic worldview, and I'm not going to go into that. We're going to have a show on worldviews, and I'll go into it in detail at that
naturalistic
time. Naturalistic. Naturalistic, meaning that, in general, that I believe there's a natural processes that go on out there, not the supernatural. So you can contrast naturalist with somebody who believes in the supernatural.
And that natural's better, but natural's...
Well, I don't want to go too much into that, because we're going to have a whole show on worldviews.
Likely story.
On worldviews.
What would that be called? I'm sure that's some kind of fallacy.
Well,
fallacy.
The reason I even bring up the idea of worldview at this point is because I thought, in order to explain my sources of motivation are, I need to explain that I have made some assumptions. And the assumptions that I made is that I accept the principle of evolution, okay? That nature doesn't care. So nature doesn't care whether human beings live or not. The principles of evolution are, you know, random mutation, natural selection. There's no direction. natural evolution doesn't have a direction or a goal, all right? So I can't use that as an argument that, you know, and I'm not going to attempt to do that. But I do believe in the principles of evolution. So what I've come up with as to why I feel so strongly about this is really three sources of motivation. One is biological. Another is purely emotional. And the third is what I call rationalization, a rationalization for a sense of purpose. Okay. So now, because a person with a naturalistic or naturalist worldview lacks a sense of purpose, I can't go to the good book and find out what my purpose is. Can't go to any book. So if you have a naturalistic worldview, you're out there with the task of finding out what your purpose is, defining your sense of purpose. It's an existential task that you have. Mm-hmm. And the reason I bring this up is because it does relate to what my politics are and what I think is important in life and sustains this belief that it's important that humanity goes on. So let me just real quickly, I know I'm taking a lot of time here, but let me real quickly give you what I mean about those three things. Biological is we have biological drive that has evolved to survive and to propagate. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of intuitively built into us. Mm-hmm. So that is one reason that I think that that's one source of motivation that I have for this idea that humanity is worth saving and is worth going on in perpetuity as long as we can.
Because we're driven to?
Because I'm not defending this with the idea that what I'm saying here is that I'm examining my sources of motivation for this.
Mm, okay.
And that's one source of motivation. It's a very strong intuitive drive to survive. It's there. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm not trying to create an argument here to justify as much as I am to introspect and to say this is why I believe this so strongly.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Okay, that's 7 minutes. Do you want to pass it off and have Julie rebut?
I would like to know, what was number two? And let's talk about number three. I'm not going to talk as long as him.
number two is emotion. And it's just that I am filled with such a sense of awe at what human beings have created. Music, cinema,
Facebook, nuclear bombs,
big buildings.
There goes our facilitator.
Oh, yeah.
It's too easy, you guys.
See how easy it is to get sucked into the content?
Yes.
But I'm just in awe at that. And I'm just telling you that it's an emotional, it's almost a spiritual experience with me when I read about in intricate detail about what we know about our own physiology, our own psychology, what we know about the universe, and what we've accomplished in the short span, 200,000 years since modern humans have been on the planet. The last one is a rationalization for a sense of purpose. So the idea that I can contribute to, in some way, to human beings, mankind, humanity going on, it directs my politics in order to drive motivation towards sustainability of living on the planet, for example. Global cooperation between all people so that we can work out our problems.
Bob, the eternal optimist.
So that
was an ad hominem attack.
So that's the third prong of this. That's the third source of motivation. Okay. Those are the three sources of motivation that help me feel so strongly.
Yes, facilitator?
5 minutes.
Oh, okay. I thought you were raising your hand. I thought you had a comment.
No. I'm trying to shut up.
You're doing a great job. Thanks,
Thank
Martin.
You.
Okay, so that's interesting. I wasn't quite expecting that. This isn't so much an argument. Bob's not convincing me that humanity is worth saving. He's explaining to me why he feels that humanity is worth saving.
That's
I wasn't ready for that, to be honest.
Oh, good. Well, you know, and I didn't know how I was going to approach this, but I can see that it's very difficult to actually find some sort of evidence, because this is a values-based argument. If it's a values-based argument, then you're trying to figure out where your values mm-hmm. are coming from.
Mm-hmm. No, that's exactly it, because it is interesting. So our proposition, again, is just four words: humanity is worth saving. And each one of those words I did kind of dig into, and I thought it was interesting you picked up worth, because that is the values statement. Worth, I mean, how much is a candy bar worth? How much is your life worth? How much is your child's life worth? So we are getting into values, something that would be very hard to have evidence-based, or at least you would have to agree on how you assign worth to not just an individual life, which we philosophically have a hard time doing, but to an entire species. And so I will say I'm coming at it from a decidedly existential point of view, which is worth, much like your third point, is what you rationalize your sense of purpose is. As an existentialist says, existence precedes essence. That first you exist, and then you figure out why you exist. That not that we were born with a purpose, not that a purpose or value is assigned to us. And I think this is interesting too, because we're touching on if either Bob or I were a committed theist, this conversation would probably go very differently, because a common theistic position, or somebody who believes in God, would say, well, the value of life is assigned by God. And here we're actually kind of in a tricky spot, because Bob and I are not exactly in that position. So I don't think the value of life is assigned outside of us. And specifically, the purpose of my life is defined by me. And the purpose collectively is figured out collectively.
So we're both coming from an existential point of view. Mm-hmm. And we've departed from the format here already a little bit, because I went on too long. But
that's why we like pontificating. I should have called you on it.
Well, you can right now. Do you want to stop and do a little processing? And
well, then we have 2.5 minutes, so let's let Julia continue and state her.
Okay.
Whatever you call it, exposition or
sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So, but that's all right, because I'm kind of glad you went first. So I would say I actually very much agree with you on number three, rationalization for the sense of purpose. Mm-hmm. But that is up to us. And I don't think if an individual were to lack a rationalization or for purpose, I don't feel that they're lacking anything, or that their worth changes, because there is no worth there. And in a way, if I were to kind of have my somewhat naturalistic hat on, I don't see a reason why a human's life is worth, in this value way, any more than any other animal. Because that value is not assigned by a creator, in my book. And it is us who said we are more important than other animals or living creatures. And I, as an individual, I don't know that I agree with that. That's sort of collectively what we've been working with for the last few millennia. The biological drive, that is definitely there. We want to, you know, as a species, we want to procreate. We want to have more of us. But I don't know if that's a reason either. I mean, sure, follow that drive. I'm hungry. I'm driven to eat. I still also overeat. I eat more than I should sometimes. I eat things that I shouldn't eat, and I'm driven to do it. That doesn't make it inherently right or wrong. It's a drive that I have that I choose what to do with it. I will also point out that an interesting difference is I have not had children and Bob has. So maybe that's a little personal perspective. And yeah, emotion, sure, we feel all kinds of things. I mean, I don't want to go to work in the morning. I have a strong emotion about that. But, you know, oh, well, got to get up, got to go to work. I would, for clarification of my point, I'm sort of like, if humanity saves itself, oh, is my time up?
Well, I can take the 15 minutes is up. So I think you should finish your sentence and then we'll do the 5 minute thing.
Okay. I'm very actually kind of neutral on this. In a way, if humanity figures out how to save itself, I'm not going to protest. I'm not going to, you know, say, oh, hey, humanity, go kill yourself. You know, I'm not against humanity per se. But at the same time, you know, if we as a species cannot get our stuff together enough to save our own butts, I don't know if that's a loss. I don't know. And I don't know that the value is there, that the value for us continuing to persevere serves anyone but ourselves. So I'll leave it with that.
Okay, that's good. That's good. Okay, now we're going to...
Can we all agree that I'm right now?
Well, I have to say, as the observer in this, that I didn't really hear any disagreement. You know, Bob stated his ideas, and you stated your ideas. You're not trying to persuade him or anybody, and Bob isn't trying to persuade anybody. He's just stating his thing. But you did pontificate a little bit, Bob, I got to say. But so that was one of the guidelines, is that you're not supposed to do that, right? So
Well, yeah.
mean,
I also cut him off a few times.
Well, that was that you inserted, yeah.
Yeah.
So that, but in terms of observing the process, it's like you're just both stating your case.
Yeah.
So I think in the next segment that we could get into a little more dialogue and see where that goes with the disagreement part.
Yeah. And I would say about the pontificating is that, yes, what we're trying to do is demonstrate how folks can have a mutual exchange about things that they don't agree on.
Right.
And I will take the point that, yes, I spent much too much time trying to get these barrage of ideas out. Julia was good about getting in there, but it was hard for her. And so, yeah, I violated that idea. I think it's best to give some ideas and some hooks of ideas that you can explain later on in the conversation, but then pause and let the other person respond to those. Stop yourself from doing that. So, take that as a valid criticism.
Okay, it was a little repetitive because you did state it and then you restated it and elaborated.
And that's another thing. Don't repeat yourself, repeat yourself, repeat yourself. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so we're good. And we're going to start the second 15 minutes now. And I think that we should say before we go that this is K-Mud and this is Thinking Clearly. And this is Bob and Julia having a civil discussion about something they disagree about, which is humanity is worth saving. And I am Margaret and I am their mediator, facilitator, timekeeper, and coin tosser.
All around awesome K-Mud programmer.
So let's proceed with our second 15-minute segment.
Okay. Well, let me try and understand what I heard you saying. One of the things I heard you saying is, and it got me curious, I heard you saying that there is no reason to value human beings more than any other animals. Did I hear that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what got me thinking is, where do you draw that line? Any other life form? In other words, could we say that we don't value human life any more than a bacterium?
Probably. Life form. I mean, I think so. There's, I don't know how much I know about life.
Uh-huh.
So that's a little bit of a complication. Yeah. Is the bacteria even alive? Mm. I think most would say yes. That's getting a little bit into the I'm not quite sure territory, but where I'll back that up a little bit and say, why is it we want to save a wolf, but we want to kill mosquitoes?
Mm-hmm.
Because the value we as humans assign to them, that we don't like mosquitoes, but we like wolves.
And one of the arguments I've heard of, like Peter Singer, he's a philosopher. He talks about he started the animal rights movement essentially, and he talks about sentient life. In other words, the criterion are to be able to feel pain, and to have some sort of, doesn't have to be consciousness in the way that human beings have consciousness. But that's where he kind of draws his line.
Well, and I think
so that excludes the bacteria.
Well, and what I'm saying is, why is it for me to draw a line? Who am I? Who am I, God, who's saying, oh, the wolf is valuable, the human is valuable, but the mosquito and the bacterium aren't? It's for me, it's in from my perspective, it's an arbitrary line to draw.
Well, I guess when I think of that, where I'm coming from is that the human beings, I see human beings as being qualitatively different than many of the other animal species, in that we have some capabilities that no other animal that we know of on this planet has.
And most popes would agree with you.
Well, I'm not trying to be agreeable with popes, but I mean, you know, what I'm saying is that we have the ability to alter mm-hmm. our environment mm-hmm. so that we've untethered ourselves from evolution to some extent. We can accommodate and have flexibility that a lot of the other animals don't have.
And maybe that's given us a lot of arrogance about our worth.
Arrogance? Well, say more about that, because I want to know about it.
Well, a monkey can use a stick to get termites out of a mound, mm-hmm. you know, so that's a known use of tools. Some would say that begins to be a departure from evolution or something. The reason I bring up popes is because this does kind of come back to what has in human history been a religious argument, that the human species, we have these things that are identifiably different. We do, you know, there's a lot of reasons we're different. But somehow that makes us superior, or that because we know how we have sophisticated tools and technology to modify our environment, that somehow and we're smarter. Those are things that we have then assigned to ourselves. That being smart is a value. That's something we decided. That's a value we have. Does a monkey share that? And why would they be wrong?
What I think of, where my mind goes when you talk in those terms, is that we know that this planet is doomed. We know that the sun is going to go, the red giant.
Here we go with Bob knowing everything again.
Tell us how it is, Bob.
That's pretty
common knowledge that it's going to be billions of years, but that the sun is going. This planet is doomed, and there is no other species that is going to be able to survive and get off this planet and go on and carry on with its cultural development other than human beings.
Why is that a success other than biology? I mean, what? So first of all, you said the Earth is doomed. That is a value judgment.
It's not a value judgment.
Doomed is bad.
Well, it's not a value. It's the same as saying that the Earth will be uninhabitable in X number of years.
Yeah. So why don't
there will be no life on this planet?
Right. But the way you say that, when I hear it, is a negative, that it's doomed, you know. And no, it's just a planet, and it's just a sun doing what it was going to do, whether or not we'd be on this planet.
Okay.
It's doomed to us. But the planet
it's
itself. It's doomed to all life, but why is that bad?
Well, it's not that it's good or bad. It's just that what I'm saying is. Okay, well, I'll remove that language.
Well, you'd say the planet is going to be released into the universe.
eventually, this planet will be uninhabitable for any life unless human beings get off of the planet and colonize somewhere else in the universe. And human beings have the ability to do that. We have the potential to do that. Apes don't have the potential to do that.
That
chimpanzees don't have. Well, I know that they don't have the ability to do that. They don't
what
have
about the water bear? The the little water bear. I can't think of his name. He's in space and he gets around. Oh my gosh. I have to look up the internet.
My point is that we have a potential that no other creatures that we know of have.
Tardigrade.
Okay, tardigrade. All right. But the tardigrade itself is going to be, whatever the environment is, there is environments that tardigrade can't live in. And the human beings have the potential to change the environment or to change their environment that no other life that we know of has. And so that means that we have the potential to go on and to develop further. Our culture accentuates our biological evolution. We have that ability, and that gives us the possibility of becoming the consciousness of the universe. Now,
that's really far out. I was with you up until you started getting all far out.
Okay, but it's not really far out. I mean it literally, because we are from the substances of the universe. We're a natural product of what is in the universe. We have just developed much more complexity than other things. So we have the ability of self-consciousness, and we have the ability to understand the universe. So in that very literal way, I don't mean anything mystical, in that very literal way, we are the consciousness of the universe. We have the ability to become much more of the consciousness of the universe because we're increasingly understanding the universe. Mm-hmm. And that's a very wonderful thing in my, you know, very wonderful and amazing potential in my way of thinking. Hmm. I left her speechless.
I would like to find out what tardigrade is.
A tardigrade is a little tiny, I think of the casual name as water bear. Tardigrades are water-dwelling, eight-legged, segmented micro-animals. They were first discovered by a German zoologist in 1773, and they are known for being able to live in the vacuums of space.
Okay, thank you.
Able to, but have they found them?
I believe so, but I would have to check my evidence of that. So anyways.
Okay, but I want to understand a little bit more where you're coming from. How strongly do you feel that human beings and humanity is not worth saving?
Well, you know, again, I'm going to come back to, if we get it together enough and save our own butts, you know, I'm not going to protest. I'm not going to stop any of that quote unquote progress. But again, to even call it progress is to make a value judgment about which direction is good and which direction is bad. So I get where you're going with, you know, our biological drive is to survive. It's to have more of us. It's to continue to proliferate as a species. Bob, the eternal optimist, is, you know, thinking getting off the planet before the sun eats it. That's, you know, some really more far out thinking than I've gotten to. But I would not be opposed to that if that's what humanity got together for itself. However, we can look at the other animals in our world and we can make educated guesses about them. But in my own lifetime, when I first went to school, it was, we were the only animals with language. Well, we found out that's not the case. Then we thought we were the only animals with tools. And then we found out that's not the case. I remember being taught that the woolly mammoth was hunted into extinction by Native Americans. And then we found out that's not the case. So the understanding of the other living beings that we cohabitate with, I think, is very problematic and needs a lot of updating. I don't feel confident about how we perceive the other animals on this planet. And again, simply because we have potential, I don't think makes us more valuable.
And I just want to say that I'm being stimulated by the sense of awe of all those things that we found out. all right.
And that's that arrogance. That's that arrogance that, again, for millennia, religion, most, not all, but most religions have told us that we as humans are extra special and that value has been bestowed to us from beyond. Now, I'm not saying that's your position, but I'm saying it might be worth kind of, you know, breaking out of that perspective a little, that historic human perspective.
Yeah. Well, I want to remind listeners that we will open the phone lines at 7:50, and we have a little bit more of our demonstration and our processing to go on. But I would like to ask Julia this question. From what I know of you, you have been committed to a number of different projects.
Oh, we're getting into personal attacks now, Bob.
Which help people.
Yeah, it's true.
Which aid people, which shows a commitment to, in my way of thinking, shows a commitment to trying to make the world better.
You got me.
I'm just trying to understand, why would you do that if you didn't care about human beings and humanity going on?
Well, I never said I didn't care.
Okay.
I never said I didn't care. That brings me back to, you know, if we can get our act together enough and save our own butts, I'm not going to get in the way. I'm not going to protest. I'm not going to blockade that parade.
But you do more than just keep out of the way. You actually make contributions to the good of society.
That's true. Yeah.
I'm curious, what drives you? What motivates you if it's not that? Mm-hmm. In other words, you know, if it's just, well, why aren't you out helping chimpanzees or, you know,
reptiles. Yeah. I love my snake friends.
Yeah.
That is a good question. It's in part because, you know, on an individual by individual basis, I enjoy people. And if people want, it's kind of hard. I'm not sure. That might have to be our next show. But I do think it's a little bit of that. If the motivation is there, then that is kind of part of our evolution. That's part of our drive to be a communal animal, to improve each other's lives as well as our own. We're not isolated, individualistic animals, even though we have, you know, selfish moments, which is probably most of them. But we are a societal animal. And in that way, participating with my fellow animals of my same species is very gratifying to me. And if they are so motivated to also save humanity, then I can get with that. But my time is up.
Well, yes.
We're being beefed.
We've achieved the second 15-minute deadline.
Okay.
And
we do have a phone caller, but we'll take the rest of the time. We'll take the call at 7:50. So
yeah, we have a couple of minutes to just kind of recap what I just saw and heard.
Yeah.
And
Can
go ahead.
Real quick.
Sure.
So I think it would be different, though, if I were a dog living in a dog society. I would be concerned about improving the life of other dogs, not humans necessarily. So I do see that I'm engaging with my own species. So that has value to me individually, but in the big scheme of things, I'm not sure I would assign more value or less value than, you know, what dogs may do among their dog friends.
Okay. I liked that you, Bob, elicited more information from Julia about her position, that, you know, and you gave her some active listening feedback. What I heard you saying is this and this and this, and that that was a good moment.
Mm-hmm.
Better than pontificating.
Much better. And Julia, I liked how you stated your position. You know, it was real clear. I'm still not getting the differences between your arguments. You know, it sounds like you're kind of agreeing, really,
mm-hmm.
in a
this
way.
This is our problem.
And you're just too agreeable. But I did want to say that we didn't do one thing at the beginning that I kind of wanted to do, and I kind of got by me, and that was define saving. You know, what is saving humanity? And if it means jumping on a spaceship and escaping before it explodes, or does it mean taking care of each other and stopping all the bad stuff we're doing and make a good life for everybody? You know, and there's a vast array of mm-hmm. levels in between there also. So we didn't really get into that part, and I think it might have helped.
Yeah, and I don't think we should, you know, I have an answer to that, but I don't think we ought to get into the answer.
I
think it's important to point out that it's important when you're having conversations with people to define your terms.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because the terms is worth and saving. Both of those are key terms.
Mm-hmm. And humanity.
And you got into the worth pretty good.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
That was good definition. But so that's something that it's good to remember next time when we're doing
this. Because you can have incredibly long discussions with people and then find out you just had different definitions of, mm-hmm.
oh, yeah,
of some key word. And so it always pays.
Two different conversations.
Exactly.
Well, and I was thinking about humanity, and that often has a positive connotation, the benevolence of humankind. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about the human race, which mm-hmm. is not always just the benevolent side.
Yeah. Okay, well, it's 7:50. We have a caller on the line, I think, who's been patiently waiting. And thank you very much for calling.
And for the next folks who want to call in, the phone number is 707-923-3911.
Yeah, or 1-800-KMUD-RAD. Welcome to Thinking Clearly.
Hello, caller.
Before we get to the first caller, someone called in and they just had a comment.
Uh-huh.
Kind of an inflammatory one. Do you want it anyway?
Well,
maybe.
Yeah.
If it doesn't swear.
Go ahead.
There's no swearing. But they said if if you're discussing whether humanity is worth saving and, you know, overpopulation things, that people should commit harikiri to help out.
Harikiri.
Seppuku.
Yeah. We're talking about suicide.
Yes. and that brings me up to the point that we made at the beginning, which is we want to encourage comments on the process of this conversation, not the content of it, which is just a topic that Bob and Julia happened to pick because they disagreed on it and they wanted to have a conversation, a civil dialogue about something they disagreed about. So we're not really talking about the topic. We're talking about the process. Okay, thank you.
Okay, caller, welcome to Thinking Clearly.
Hi. I may talk about the topic and not the process. But what stimulated me to call was when you were discussing, first they said that only humans had language and then only humans had tools. And, mm-hmm. and so that pushed me to dial the phone, but my thought is that my concern about saving the planet is that with all the destructive things that humans seem to be doing and compromising all the systems that support life, we don't know which species is going to be the one that pushes us over the tipping point when it's gone. And today, the last male white rhino on Earth is very old and sick. But we don't know if it's a bacterium or a fish or a whale or a tiger. We don't know which species the planet cannot do without. But there is one, and maybe it's us, maybe it's the humans.
And it is a intriguing topic. But having listened to this, let me pose a question to you. Having listened to the interaction between Julia and I, do you have any comments on the process? We were attempting to demonstrate how two people who disagree about something can have a dialogue with each other.
Well, you folks are so much more civil than I usually am.
let's talk about that. What happens?
You do an excellent job of being civil to one another, and I think that does move the conversation forward in a wonderful way.
What happens to you when you hook up with somebody who just has an idea that's so different than yours?
Well, I've learned to walk away because people are obdurate, I am also. I have my fixed position, and not a lot of compromise on the things that where I'm going to argue with someone.
How would you like to go out tomorrow, and having been inspired by this program, go out tomorrow and attempt a civil dialogue with someone that you disagree with?
I would like it very much, and you know, actually, my son is the biggest influence in my life that pushes me in that direction. He's always reminding me to have information in my position and not just the position.
Mm-hmm.
And to try to have a well thought out response.
can you do us a favor? And if you're able to do that and attempt to have a civil dialogue, and it doesn't mean necessarily that you have to have a, you know, an evidence-based argument, but I mean somebody who you know that you're probably going to have a disagreement with, and if you do that successfully next week or whatever, send us a little email at our email address.
TC as in thinking clearly. @kmud.org. And okay. I'll comment too that you notice Bob and I are not trying to convince each other.
No. It's just so lovely listening to your civil discourse. It's very encouraging.
Okay.
And I hear you, and I will try to do that.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I think we have another caller, but thank you for calling.
Thanks so much, caller. Mm-hmm.
Bye.
Good call.
All right. Welcome, caller.
Hello.
Welcome to Thinking Clearly.
Hi, caller.
Yeah. Well, for one thing, I think it's important not to come to conclusions without having enough information.
Mm-hmm.
I think people do that a lot. But I try to have civil dialogues with people that I disagree with. What I do is I try to be respectful and listen to their point of view, and then I express my point of view. And if it's different, I may very well try to convince them that my position makes more sense than theirs. But not get into name-calling or anger. I prefer a civil debate. Debate is different than arguing with anger. I like debate. I think that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see that you guys really disagreed all that much. I don't think that what you were talking about, there was enough disagreement for you to be not civil.
Well, yeah, you know, and you might be right at that there's probably shades of disagreement, and it's much more of a challenge.
Well, so far as I want to say this, if people talk about saving the planet, and I think they mean saving humanity, because if we were stupid enough to blow ourselves up with nuclear weapons or, you know, some other way, the planet would continue, and other life forms would continue. A lot of life forms would be lost. But there would be life forms that would continue. And, you know, in another couple million years, who knows what species might evolve. You mentioned bacteria. I just wanted to say one quick thing is that bacteria are very important. I heard a whole thing about how we interact with bacteria. We couldn't live without them. There's a lot of good ones. Yes, there's a few bad ones that can make us sick. But
just like humans.
We could not exist without bacteria. It's a very synergistic kind of thing. Bacteria,
right, but you know
human.
What? We're talking about the process of the conversation,
okay.
Not the topic.
But before you go, what you were talking about stimulated me to wonder whether, because you said you have had civil dialogues, and what you do is listen and then give the other chance person. Once that person has expressed their point of view, you express your point of view. Have you ever tried restating after a person said what their point of view is, restating their argument in its strongest form, kind of restating it so that they understand, that you understand what their argument is? Doesn't necessarily mean agreeing with, but restating it.
So that they know I understand what they're saying?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
that happens
good.
All the time.
Good, good.
You know, the sun is going to... you know, it's going to get too hot for any, I don't know about the whole solar system, but at least the Earth and maybe a few planets near it are just going to burn up. And then the sun's going to die. You know, we have a time limit. It might be several million years, maybe several billion. I'm not sure.
And Bob wants to outlive the planet. I mean, that's the crazy
well, you
thing.
Know, the idea that we're going to take off on spaceships and we're going to be able to have enough oxygen and water and food and go who knows where.
Yeah.
That's all very up in the air. Who knows what might
it's
evolve.
It's amazing we ever crossed the Atlantic, if you think about it.
See how hard it is to not get sucked into the topic and the content. It's almost impossible.
Well, so you basically you're asking what I think about the process?
Yeah.
The dialogue,
the process. The process is the how of what happened.
Am I still there?
Well,
we do have another caller.
I would prefer if you guys had a dialogue about something that you really vehemently disagreed
okay.
about, that
All
you
right.
had completely different opinions we'll, about, and then not get in an argument.
We'll work on that.
We'll take that as a criticism. Do we have time for that last call, Eric? Okay, very quickly, caller, you got about 30 seconds. Welcome to Thinking Clearly.
Hey, thanks a lot. I felt like, Julia, you were kind of debating whether humans were worth more than animals, but you didn't really get into this idea of whether we were worth saving.
Hmm.
I felt like you didn't really oppose the premise of the question, and that's where I was kind of hoping you were going to press a little bit more, like, you know, would humanity, are we a detriment or not to the universe?
Hmm. Yeah, it's definitely I see that kind of was lacking there. Maybe it's a place I didn't feel quite as passionate about, but maybe something I will have some introspection about.
Okay, great call. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much. It was fun.
Thank you for the feedback. And this is we're a little past time.
Yep,
right?
We are.
And so
that was Thinking Clearly.
Tune in. That's Thinking Clearly. Thank you very much, Margaret Lewis.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure.
And Julia, and Eric, our engineer.
Mm-hmm.
Yourself, little man. Don't let them tell you that they have the plan. 'Cause everyone's lost chin deep in the sand. And what they're trying to sell to you, you shouldn't be buying. Think for yourself, little girl. Don't let them tell you.
This program was produced in KMUD's Redway Studios and is provided courtesy of KMUD, people-powered radio.